These people were almost unreal to me, living their lives in miniature as if they were in my dollhouse.
The march of developers has aggressively flattened the sand dunes into McMansion suburbs.
You're listening to All the Best. I'm Samantha Groth. I moved around a lot as a kid, but most of the time I spent growing up was in Canberra. Because we'd moved around, it didn't really feel like home. And Canberra is changing all the time. There are now trendy food trucks, and you can't roll down Parliament House anymore. I now live in Sydney, and surprisingly, I found myself surrounded by Canberrans. They aren't people I grew up with, but sometimes, if we run out of other things to talk about, we think about the lakes, the libraries, the roundabouts. Being away from Canberra, this sense of home has suddenly become more concrete. On this episode, we're visiting people's hometowns, the places people might have left, but that haven't quite left them. Let's start by going around the world.
I'm Ambika. And I grew up in Jaipur, Rajasthan, India. I used to love to travel in buses to my uni and my schools. Recently, when I went there with my daughter, who is now 8 years old, and I thought to took her in the bus. Those buses doesn't have any air conditioners. They have their open buses and the wind is coming, the sand is coming, and conductor is holding the gate and stuff like that. So she was like, oh mom, I'll die, it's so hot. And the second thing which happened, she was saying, they are not following the rules.
My name is Darren Lake. I grew up Long Island City, Queens, New York City, New York. I actually felt like I was in the suburbs because it was always go to the city, which is Manhattan, if you've ever been to New York. And I remember always going into Manhattan and being like, this is crazy. Like just even when I was a kid to even now. And it was always like New York City is crazy. Where I live is calm. I was a good kid in hindsight. I didn't want to piss my mom off. So I think the only thing we did that was crazy, there was this park. And it was called Rainy Park, and the East River, which been in New York, it's a terrible river, but it splits Manhattan and Queens. And we would basically hop over the fence and then play on the rocks, and we wait for boats to come, and the boats would create these waves, and it would be like run away from the waves. And this one time one of our friends got like he slipped and he actually like got pulled away into the water. He was fine. The East River smells like really bad, fishy water. I think people that don't live in New York, they get very offended by it. Now you got me on smells. The subway smell is something that I could see bothering people, but that like makes me feel like something's about to happen. Like as far as like something good, because whenever you were on the subway, it meant we were going somewhere when I was a kid, so we were going into the city usually.
So my name is Jules. I grew up in Buenos Aires, which is the capital city of Argentina, in a suburb called, which actually translates to Little Horse in English, which has nothing to do with animals or anything, but it was a really busy little suburb in the middle of the city. So the smells that remind me the most about my hometown would have to be definitely the smell of cars, the smell of nuts being toasted on the streets. That was like a big thing over there. It was like sugar-coated nuts. That's the smell that I probably remember the most. And it's something that I carry still to this day. So whenever like the World Cup comes up, the one ritual we have with my family, apart from watching it all together, is that at 3 a.m, we will toast nuts with sugar. And that smell just takes me back there. So obviously one of the things that happens when you live with so many in like such a densely populated city, you're bound to come across really quirky characters. my downstairs neighbor, who was convinced somehow that our apartment was above hers, and it wasn't. Like, my dad's an architect, and he explained to this old woman, our apartments do not clash. But she kept thinking in her head that every day at midday we would be dragging a rock across our kitchen on purpose just to piss her off. And one of the things that I actually remember from my childhood is playing innocently with my brother in our tiny kitchen and then hearing this lady yelling out what would translate as rotten rats.
Hey, I'm Sibylla. Hometown is a bit of a tricky word for me because I grew up in three different countries. My happiest childhood memories were probably in Norway. I had a very fairy tale childhood, I think, growing up, building snowmen and running around till midnight because the sun was still up.
Rowan Simpson lives in Cronulla, in the Sutherland Shire, which is in Sydney's south. His grandparents, who were Indian immigrants, moved there in the 1960s. While Rowan has a lot of fond memories of growing up in Cronulla, it's also a place most known for the Cronulla race riots in 2005. This story comes with a language warning.
So if you're driving south from the city, past the airport, and manage to make it over the hump of Captain Cook's Bridge, then you've successfully entered the Shire. And if you still have gas in the tank, keep pushing to the coast and you'll find Cronulla. It's a little paradise, a pocket of peninsulas and palm trees, and while it's just as well known for its pristine beaches, it's also famous for its insular attitude. Cronulla, and the Sutherland Shire generally, is a suburb in transition. It's a quintessentially Aussie beachside suburb, but recent changes have seen Cronulla morphing into something that feels a lot like Bondi. It's one of those days in February when even the burst of cold air that ushers you into the Cronulla Woolies can't budge the wet patch in the centre of your back. The meat aisle is perhaps the coolest place in the Shire today. Move your black bitch. My mum turns around. The blue singlet and thongs behind her says, the fucking checkout's free, woman. I tend to brush off comments that the suburb I've called home for the majority of my life is a cesspool of Southern Cross tattoos, fish and chip shops, and high-vis racism. There's currently a 12-foot mural of Shannon Knoll showing off his Southern Cross tat, which looms over the sandy streets of Cronulla. And look, a 12-foot Knollsy may just be the pervasion of a viral internet trend into the real world, but the ochre Australiana that he represents could not be more at home in Cronulla. Incidents like my mother's remind me that despite the good-natured, small-town humility of Cronulla and the desire to nod g'day to old surfers, there is a layer of xenophobia that simmers below the surface. The racism seeps through often enough, in the form of an offhand comment that sits uncomfortably, or a funny turn of phrase. To me, Cronulla represents the best and worst of the Australian personality. On one hand, there's the old-school mateship and an unspoken ethos of equality. Any tall poppy that attempts to assume that they're better than anyone else will be affectionately cut down to the size of the rest of us. This attitude is rounded by a real sense of community and the communal belief that we must be the luckiest people on earth. It's the little things that create this small town vibe. Stopping to have a chat with all the neighbours on the walk to the beach, being on a first name basis with the butcher and the baker and the barista. Growing up, I knew all the kids on my little cul-de-sac. We would spend afternoons running through each other's houses and riding our bikes around. Of course, none of these things are unique to Cronulla, but I do think they're becoming rarer. On the other hand, Cronulla is also the community in Sydney that is most well known for its racist inclinations.
It was billed as the day Cronulla residents would take back the beaches, but it soon turned into a riot.
In December 2005, these inclinations escaped the surface and erupted over three hot days and nights of unbridled race riots. I was 9 years old. I remember the roads being closed, seeing a lot of police around, and a lot of unfamiliar faces pouring into the Shire. At the time, I was young enough to be oblivious to the spread of hate that tore through the suburb. Seas of men took to the streets, beating their chests with one hand and swinging a beer with another, their angry presence reclaiming their land from a so-called Muslim invasion. They rallied around a sense of nationalism and righteousness, preached through the radio waves by Alan Jones. For him and his listeners, there was a moral imperative to do something about Lebanese Muslims. In the lead-up to the riots, he had called them vermin, who want to rape, pillage and plunder a nation that's taken them in. 270,000 text messages inciting racial hatred were sent on the 11th of December, rallying troops to what they called Cronulla's first wog-bashing day. I grew up in Cronulla with an awareness of casual racism, but the riots created an atmosphere where those supposedly innocent judgments turned into an active hostility. For the rioters, the Shire was God's country, a chosen island of surf, sun, and small-town communitarianism. The location and mindset of Cronulla is quite separate to the multiculturalism of other parts in Sydney. This separation creates a feeling of isolation and exclusivity. It makes the Shire so unique, but also resulted in the lynch mob-style bashing of Lebanese youths. I remember there was a Sikh man who ran the 7-Eleven down next to the fish shop. He had been there for years and was a friend of my grandparents. During the riots, a convoy of masked men drove up and hovered outside his store. Their intent was destruction. Maybe they had mistaken his uncut beard for that of an Arab, or perhaps the blinding anger didn't discriminate that finely. Their attack was eventually prevented by the timely arrival of police, but enough had been done, and Mr. Singh left the store shortly after the riots. ...2005 should be put into context. 9/11 was still fresh, and the London bombings earlier that year had confirmed that terrorism was no longer confined to faraway lands. Increasing immigration from Asian and Middle Eastern countries meant that the bodies on the beaches were a mix of colours and accents. Cronulla's raw response was an impetuous reaction to the fear of global events and immigration. Like a child crying out in confusion, the people of Cronulla cried for their suburb and their country. Eventually, the dust settled, and the weary-eyed residents wiped their eyes to the reality of what had occurred. Public apologies flowed, and arrests were made. Nowadays, the collective memory of the riots has faded, and the aggressive sentiments of pride and intolerance have seeped back below the surface. The incident was an ugly blight on our peaceful suburb. We say that, oh, but it was a one-off, because we think we're not like that anymore. But the isolation and the exclusivity that enabled the riots in 2005 are perhaps fading. The borders of our city are expanding. Cronulla is now within the sights of new, young, wealthy families looking for their sea change. The march of developers has aggressively flattened the sand dunes into McMansioned suburbs. The suburban gentrification brings with it the good and the bad of the hipster migration. I can feel the small-town sentiment slowly dying, as new generations don't see the value in knowing the name of the local butcher, and it's no longer safe for the kids to play on the streets in the afternoon. I'm still a proud resident of Cronulla. It will always be a special place for me. But to avoid repeating the anger of 2005, I think it has to lose its locals-only mentality and learn to share its sunny beaches.
That story was by Rowan Simpson, with help from supervising producer Alison Chan. The news clips you heard were from Channel 10. All the Best is a great place to learn how to produce audio documentaries. If you pitch an awesome story to us, we'll even pay you with a supervising producer. and we can supervise remotely, regardless of where you live. Email us at contact@allthebestradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. Australia is a diverse country with different landscapes and pockets that we each call our hometown.
I'm Ange. My hometown is the Gold Coast, but I moved to Melbourne a couple of years ago. When I think of the Gold Coast, the first thing that comes to mind is the impermanence. Buildings and people seem to come and go all the time. I grew up in a high-rise near the famous Glitter Strip. Each year, as I looked on, the population swelled and shrank around me, changing with the seasons. In my home, the Esplanade Holiday Apartments, I felt 22 stories tall. I could stand outside my bedroom and look down on the tiny people walking, riding and surfing below. These people were almost unreal to me, living their lives in miniature as if they were in my dollhouse. Perspective is hard when you're 8 or 9. If you were on the ground and you looked up, I'd look very small too. Perhaps you wouldn't see me at all. But everything else on the Gold Coast felt big. Big, shiny and loud. It's like everything was competing to be part of your holiday memories, calling out with offers of fun, sand, sun, action and thrill. Attractions would appear and disappear all the time, but you'd be forgiven for not noticing. There was always something new to look at. You could end up feeling like everything's pretty temporary there. Maybe that's because on the Gold Coast, so many people are just passing through. Here for a week of school holidays, a year-long working trip, or a single phase of life. Sometimes it felt odd to call this holiday destination home, when it seemed that most people had another home to go to. And eventually, I was just passing through too. My family returned to its origin in Brisbane. Friends moved away for work or love or a change. I changed too, and I left for Melbourne. Now there are fewer and fewer reasons to return to this place where I grew up. Is it still home if you have to pay for your accommodation?
My name's Kat Galang, you can call me Kat. I grew up in the western suburbs of Sydney, in Maryong, Doonside and Quakers Hill. When I was growing up, we were definitely the odd ones out, especially in Doonside. We were a small Filipino family. I was born here, so I classed myself as Australian, but looks-wise, that didn't wash with the other kids in the neighbourhood. You know, small things, we'd walk down the street and people would yell out horrible racist remarks. And I remember when I was learning to drive, I was terrified and I never wanted to turn down certain streets because I knew white kids would be playing there and they'd see me. And I was so embarrassed to be in a learner's car. So little things like that, it doesn't really affect us, but it did as well at the same time. And I did worry about my mum a couple of times. She got hassled at the supermarket car park when she was on her own, and I didn't like that. I definitely felt very protective, and I was angry because she couldn't defend herself, you know. But I thought I could take the kids on. I might want to fight back. In high school, I had short hair, and I was a bit of a tomboy, so I dressed like a boy. A couple of kids started a fight with my other Filipino friend of mine. At the bus stop, and they picked up a stick and hit me on the arm, so I fought back. And we didn't have any trouble after that, but it was certainly terrifying at the time because I was angry but also very scared.
My name's Samara. I grew up in a very small town in Brisbane, and it was very annoying because there was no public transport there, and to get anywhere it was 20 minutes drive and then it was an hour on the train to get to the city. So that was a bit of a drainer, and I was pretty happy to leave.
My name's Amy. So I grew up in a small town called Gelatin, which is on the northernmost edge of the Atherton Tablelands in North Queensland. It was a really small town. I think we had like 500 residents, and it's all just like red soil and sugar cane and cows and one convenience store, and it was like right at the top of the one road where you get out of the town. So every time you left or came home, you'd pass the store, and it was like you could get hot chips or like terrible frozen fish and fuel, and that was like all that they sold. And it was like the best. It was just where everyone went. Every year, I don't remember what month, but it would be sugarcane season, and for just weeks on end, the whole town would smell like burnt sugar, and it was great.
Hey, I'm Dylan Saville. I'm currently living in Sydney. I'm originally from Tasmania. I grew up in Launceston in the north. There's sort of pockets where it seems ancient. You know, there's different looking trees, big gum trees, a big flowering snow gums, and these old eucalypts and these like huge ferns. We call them man ferns. I'm not quite sure what their names are, but they're the size of a man, basically. And that's only half an hour out of the urban area where you grow up, and you can sort of, you know, disappear quite quickly if you want to escape, which I don't think a lot of people do take that opportunity.
Thanks to Ange Glinderman, Sasha Rosen, Selena Shannon, Beck Fari and Alison Chan for recording those memories of hometowns. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney, in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. Our executive producer is Alison Chan. Our Victorian State Coordinator is Beck Fari. Our Community Coordinator is Chloe Gillespie. Jordan Fennell is our SYN Community Coordinator. Matilda Fay is our social media producer. Tegan Nichols compiles the show. And I'm Samantha Groth, your host. Shining Bird composed our theme music, and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. All the Best is heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and find all of our other episodes at allthebestradio.com. We're also a podcast, so subscribe to us on your podcast app so you can listen to us every time you take the journey back home.